given what we just had, but and it's called the Observer, the removal. My friend first near the corner, then his mother on the corner, facing into the corner, and then round the corner, the three sisters and a brother overlooking their dead father in a straight line. One more I want to do, because as I know that, sure, you're all aware, tonight is Burns night, so I think it's appropriate we have a bit of Burns. So, my father was a farmer. My father was a farmer from up on the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He bade me act manly part, though I never had a father. For without an honest, manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world, my course I did determine. Though to be rich was not my pitch, to be great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolved was I at least to try to mend my situation. Through many a way and vain essay, I courted fortune's favour. Some cause unseen still step between to frustrate each endeavour. Sometimes by friends, sometimes by foes, oh, I was overpowered. Sometimes by friends forsaken. And when my hope was at the top, I still was worst mistaken. And then sore harassed and tired at last with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, and the future hid, it's good or ill untried. But the present hour is in my power, and so I will enjoy it. Thank you.
Sound words, if ever I heard them. Thanks for marking Burns Night with us. Next up we have Josie.
Good evening. I'm going to indulge myself this evening and read one of my favourite songs. By John Mayfield, called Sea Fever. I must down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky. And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind song and the white sails shaking. I must down to the seas again, the call of the running tide, the wild call and the clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying and the flung spray and the blown spume and a grey dawn breaking. I must down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife, and all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and a quiet sleep and a sweet dream, then the long trip's over.
Thanks so much, Joe. From one tall person to another tall person, the illustrious winner of the five-word challenge. How are you doing?
Woo! I think next Monday night is the first of spring, so I'll get this poem in. So it's called Winter. Winter has come. The night grows cold. All that I am retreats, takes refuge in memory. Death stalks the frozen land beyond my skin. Ghosts haunt the crumbling ruin of my mind. I no longer yearn, no longer grieve. I give in, shivering beneath a chill wind that beneath a thin wind that chills me to the bone. I am old. I am useless. I am alone.
Thanks very much, Paddy. Next up, we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Jenny. Friday evening. Spy glasses enlarge. Lead lights reveal. Compass concurs. Surfers reborn. Harbour enfolds. Winches recoil. Rudders divert. Seagulls gyrate. Fenders defend. Cargoes discharge. Prawners retail. Topsides rehose. Netting re-knots. Sailors regale, forecasts absorb, galleys entice. Skippers equate, kettles proclaim, schooners decant, legends relate, deadlines discard, outboards retilt, dry glasses reduce, texters contact. Hunters pontoon, potters rebate, divers divest. Shrimpers unpot, canoes recanute, ladies restroke, grapnels ungrapple, sheetings uncleat, jet skis detest, circus loud hails, railings restrict, slipways congest, trailers uncouple, bylaws adhere, forklifts frequent, heron hijacks. Show-offs breaststroke, painters retouch, seacocks reseal, ensigns referral, anglers escape, charcoals depict, sundries restash, poodles repaddle, tankers refuel, tourists day trip, grey seals resnatch, flake ice replenish, chandlers equip, bill pumps regush, logs to update, yawnings recover. Thank you.
Thanks, Seamus. Next up we have Mark Noonan.
Hey everybody, this is my first time here. Here's a poem called I'm Not Really Angry About Anything. But what about the war? What about the famine and the hunger in Darfur? What about me mammy who's got a gimpy leg? Or that time in school the lads gave me an on-the-spot improvised emergency vasectomy with a clothes peg? I won't tell about these things. I'm angry and you don't know what it means. What about the HSC? What about the long waiting times in the trolleys? What about the government? What about the exploitation through miseducation of our youngest and most innocent? I won't tell about these things. I'm angry and you don't know what it means. What about the global warming? Should the whole place could be gone in the morning? On account of rich people in short-haul flights burning up the sky with pollution while they sip a free champagne without a care in the world about anything other than themselves and they go home and light the big fires and the rest of us are making an effort but these people don't even recycle, they're fucking the whole thing up, so they consider it risk factors capitalist strikes. I get upset about these things. I get angry. You don't know what it means. I care about the war and the famine and Darfur and the nanny and what got done to me Willie with the clothes peg and the health service and the elderly and who's run the country and the leeches of society and the global warming and the CO2 emissions and I haven't even mentioned the following seriously problematic worldwide conditions. Deforestation, corporate intimidation, bad sanitation, poor drinking water, factory farming, the coal mining thing where they take the top off the mountain, advertising, amateur skydiving, South Africa, Thailand, Malaysia as a whole, the ever-increasing illusion of the ever-increasing racial tolerance in Canada, even though everybody wants to keep their own cultural identity and to lead to arguments over structuring society in an inclusive way, and it's sad that the French are French and the Queen are Queen, there's no happy medium, everybody's fighting not to turn Canadian. Western medicine, Eastern medicine, herbal remedies, quack, 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 every box of dope, and worse than that, I'm angry and you don't give a fuck. Which is right, I said. I don't. I care about small things. My actual family, my here and now friends, where a lot of us are going. It's exciting and it's real and it's not actually important at all. And as for the rest, for Darfur and the horrors and the whole thing in Iraq and all the suffering and the Walmart and everything, deep down in there I know it's slightly wrong not to care what I'm knowing. but sure I might write a couple of letters and pay attention to elections and give the odd bit to concern and feel guilty during sex because I live in a wealthy country and have the health and shelter and food and lifestyle and I got brought up okay and have no debilitating diseases, all of which contributes to the fact that I have the privilege of being able on occasion to maintain an erection. That should not be enough, and don't bother me with actually having to care about anything. Thanks very much.
Welcome, you passed the test, you can come back next week. I'm of course joking, everyone's welcome back. Whether or not you're able to garner such laughter. Great, thank you, welcome, and next up we have another human, Niall Harris.
I don't think this will be very humorous. That was an angry young man. Now you're going to listen to an angry old man. I'm not really. Anyway, it's called Land of 100,000 Fuck-Offs. A Requiem for the Celtic Tiger, influenced by a Woody Guthrie song. And it is a song, it's not poetry, of course. I'm not going to sing it. Travel through this country from west to eastern shore. It really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. Saw the western farmer filling forms on sheep and cows. Heard the auction hammer knocking down his house. Talked to fed-up fishermen in pubs beside the shore. And fish officials saying, not much fish there anymore. And the factory worker crying. She's just lost her job. With company bosses saying, relocate, save a good few bob. Heard the hospital patient on a corridor trolley. What the hell's the government doing with all the lolly? In the Venice of our south, where the crack is finer, no more the Pfizer riser, cheaper to make in China. Saw communities struggle for local democracy, working for zero waste, no burning hypocrisy. Heard the weary citizen wondering if to vote. Vote no and they'll tell us, don't rock the feckin' boat. At a writer's bash in the charming party city, people saying bitterly, why is our water shitty? And we have a warport where foreign troops transit, and torture flights touch down, no politician bans it. In the capital of boom and bust, the humour is laconic. Putting up a bloody spike is so fucking ironic. Billions into docklands by those bankroll tiger guys. Didn't anyone tell them the seas are on the rise? 1 second richest nation, but some kids still ill fed. Others being abused, wishing they were dead. Steamrolling the people to bring the gas ashore. Just who is shelling out and who is it all for? First we had the floods, destroying people's houses, destroying houses in the rains. Now we have a water shortage and frost-shattered lanes. Heard the fat cat banksters asking for a mighty handout and the government saying, ah, sure, why not, but not for another Celtic pig-out. Travel through this country, through this charming land, prayed we'd get together and together make a stand. Gandhi-like, for 100,000 welcomes in a green and pleasant place. People before vast prophets, a state with a human face. Sinead.
Thank you, next, I give a warm welcome to Gerald Heffernan.
This poem is called Our Anti-Catharsis Condition in Defense of Romance. As you approached that skyway, it was like a postcard, a photograph or still from a film. But it was there with its dynamism of which we are so terrified, exposed in its apprehension. You could not retreat into your song of shelter. We were blind together. With our mouths bruised from trying, we mumbled what we thought we could not pass over. Our drone, our silence, like blatant fools, we were unfamiliar with how to use language, but our mystical humanity made them listen to the words of people who are dumb, people who cannot speak. We sat in our bedsits, but we could not hear. We walked the streets and listened, but we could not hear. We went to church, but we heard nothing. We went to New York City and the Grand Canyon, but we did not hear. We listened to jazz and talked to old men with gray beards, but we could not hear. We saw the sunrise and planted a tree, but we couldn't hear. We stopped trying to listen, but we heard nothing. We lay down together, but we only shared numb silence. We could not hear.
Thanks very much. Next up we have Patricia Walsh. Thank you, Jennifer. And this one is called The Kiss. How the horizon has broadened when you set your sun on a plane. I see a multitude scanning through my mouth, a love sharper than all the leaves. Catching as I fall, I find home in a whirling ache. Once finished, I feel that I and the event are ready to recommend. This one is called Vignette. My one false love lives lurking in daylight, fumbling ways through fortune, elation, to reach a point where we can cry for more, and more will be given, since no one is rewarded by walks alone. This is called Proverbs, very short. You cannot expect to cast a shadow unless the sun is started shining on you from behind. Thanks. And that last one, Patricia. Thanks very much. Completely forgot. The next one we have is Brendan O'Sullivan.
This poem is called A Leaf. A leaf of mine that once was high upon the tree with favour. In spring, I thought that I could hang upon the bough forever. The summer's heat, it seemed to beat a peace into my soul. I saw no danger, never thought that I would toss and roll beneath the biting autumn wind that left me with disdain to lie upon the sodden earth to face the winter's rain. Thank you.
And next up we have Dick Beamish.
Dawn, Oscar Ireland, that's my name. A song that I wrote about my townland in West Cork, near 2050. Corrigrua. Ten mortis per boa, gobar corrigrua. Is pincha at lawn with la holon. Co hauling, co halkuk, co heaving is co hootuk. Ni oi to a lehe denering. Tarquinicum creen snake on skilling gun peen, a length of braham oigil. Extrugal and fain gun bollet in vain, of a brahnu or skivok mafola. Tarrayat are doct have, and nor saras na lave, in aris ni nains to go guarded. The ardi ehelig is doing the gauhuk, is in dark heat, le fecal gaglenach. O yes, ta dun deda, shall cune, shall gaper, is an dulik, bar in the tide. A gap ker dun nuille, ta laan in shidunye, le corrigin a bain tiernum mire. Is queen lum, le lehent a saurig shaved greenach, is ma aig a rair car crothna, in jesivin a tlee, is unum cree, is the ling a dull har brin a boch. an Rawakon Bon or Rean the Link Fadda. Dunno in a rimel no borra. The town take borra, her tear, her trar cool lehan. Is gone cold odor a gum, a gaeska. O hoig, ton pekeen, a draw crook fiend, her bar crick the phonera. Art a folkwave and sogart, in on the bent lehe, is some tatrin or aga and gogart. O hoig ne swidit a cotton macon, art a curragun tod re louis, is balin ard in a hilt a gardo, ma corsa, and ek in the hui. Tell him what the spell bog of our carigrua is brunt for at nor our na so long. Ta da holot more hempel at tear as a mir, or quite as low at our lutigum. Tell him what the spalte go dee clock the creature. Go balia more the seera. Go bar carigrua it ainer fin do. Is tog long that hool the hour come.
Thanks very much. Next up we have Sue Cosgrave. This new poem doesn't have a title yet, and there's one line of German in it. For those who don't speak German, it reads, we make time for you. Well, now one day together, you and I live, sustained by misconceptions. This waif at in sacrament we lay, ever so gently, on our lascivious tongues. Later, on Marienplatz, when the whimsy winter sunshine and rich wine wine, I step away from where you sit, to stand alone beneath a sign that reads, Wir nahmen uns dies für sie. From there I store the memory of you, as you gaze upwards. At what? Which detail crenellated alabaster intrigues you so? While every detail of your face blazes an elusive fractional trail of my retina. I see your square chin, your lips curving with that special smile, the one reserved for moments of peace. There too is your time anointed forehead, and the startled strands of your wispy hair swept back haphazardly with a careless hand. Only your eyes remain hidden, a portion of you I may never touch, the only true portion of you, the one that holds my misconceived image, as I am today and only today. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Can we beg one from Ellen to leave? Is that possible?
Okay, thank you so much for that. It's been a while since I read a story, so instead of a poem, I have a story. If those of you don't know the Bible, it's about the book of Genesis. It's about Adam's story. And I don't think you've read this before here, so I just got a sad story from you about a friend of mine who died. The only response would be a very cynical story, so I think you'd appreciate this. Adam's story. When Adam was 920 years of age, or thereabouts, it dawned on him that his eyes were growing weaker, his voice was failing, his bones were creaking, and arthritis was setting into his joints. He began to notice that the birds of the air died, and the beasts of the field, and every living thing that walked upon the earth. And he thought that such a death might come his way also. His children often came to visit him, and their children, and their children's children, and their seed and breed, and generations. There was nothing he enjoyed more than telling them stories, because stories at that time were young and new, had not been heard before. "Do one about the snake, tell us that one," said Tuffet, who was a bit of a hard man. "I always liked that one." "No, something more personal," said Ruthie, "like the way you met your wife. How it was for you, the first time ever, and all that kind of stuff. I have to hear that again." "Forget it," said Haram. "The one about the apple." "I want the apple." "It wasn't an apple anyway, you twit. It was a pear, an orange, a fig, a pomegranate, Adam had forgotten the details by now. It was such a long time ago, and he was nearly believed his own version. But there was one thing he hadn't forgotten, and it welled up in him like a lump in his throat. He had to get it off his chest to set the record straight. "Look," he said, "it was like this. There was no apple. In fact, there was no fruit at all. Well, of course, there were olives and cherries and berries and lemons and grapefruit and plums and nuts and bananas and growth for which we have no name yet. But none of them were forbidden. There was no forbidden fruit. We could eat them all." There was a great silence that was only broken by a groan from far off, which was like unto a myth slowly dying. "And a tree in the middle of the garden," asked somebody tentatively. "There were many trees in the middle of the garden, whatever that was." "And a snake," someone was tried. "No snake either, or if there was, it was just as friendly as every other animal." "And God?" "He never chucked us out of the garden. We left ourselves voluntarily." Some of the older offspring began to get a little angry, not just because they had to swallow this stuff for hundreds of years, but because they had to earn their bread by the sweat of their brow. They looked down at their calloused hands and at the scars and cracks and warts and weals, and they felt more deeply the pain in their lower backs. "Okay, let's get this straight once and for all," said Alembevic, who apparently already had the makings of a good committee chairman. "Do I take it that what you are saying is that yourself and our great, 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 etc. grandmother were living together in this fabulous garden, that you had sweet Fanny Adam to do except to frolic beneath the trees, to no stroke of work to do, food and sweet sustenance dripping from the trees, the beasts of the world as your slaves and servants, and then one fine day you just upped and fucked off out of paradise and left it all behind you?" "That's about it in one go," said Adam, with a certain relief now that the truth was out. "And why? Why were you so dumb as stupid to leave the Garden of Paradise, to leave all that behind you?" asked most of them in chorus. "Because it was boring, of course," said Adam. "Boring, boring, fucking boring!"